Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
To Signs of Life Radio. I'm Kimberly Saavedra, director of the Comluck Center in Claremont, California, and I'm here with Dr. Betty Kovach, author of The Miracle of Death and her forthcoming publication, The Merchants of Light. We're co-hosting tonight's show for Bob and Fran of Forever Family Foundation, and before we introduce tonight's guest, we would like to let you know about two upcoming Forever Family events. There will be a webinar on February 15th, Spirit Talks and Spirit Walks, after-death communication in the lab with Dr. Julie Beigel and Mark Bocuzzi. Their annual grief retreat weekend will take place July 14th through 16th in Chester, Connecticut. And all the information regarding these wonderful events will be available on Forever Family's website at foreverfamilyfoundation.com. As a matter of fact, I think they're there now, so you can go there after the show and find out all you need to know about these events. And tonight's special guest is Eva Herr, who is author of two books, Agape, The Intent of the Soul, and her new just-released book, Consciousness, Bridging the Gap Between Conventional Science and the New Science of Quantum Mechanics. Eva also hosts two radio shows, Infinite Consciousness and The Eva Herr Show. Eva, welcome, and please tell us about yourself, your work, and how you became involved in this work.
Oh, gosh, that takes me back a long way. I got started in this work because I had a spontaneous enlightenment experience back in the early 90s. And I had a dark night of the soul. I had my child was kidnapped, my father died, and I lost my job all at one time, and it really kind of brought me to my knees. And about a year later, something just happened. I just went to bed one night, and it was my father who, and I guess it was about 2 or 3 years later, I guess, my father, who had been dead for a couple of years, came back to see me, and I was asleep. I went to bed late that night. I was getting ready for a trial, actually, because I'm as a paralegal, and I can remember going to bed late, and it was in the spring, so it was too hot for the air conditioning, but too warm for the heat. So I had a floor fan going, and I could hear that. So I know that I wasn't all the way asleep because I was conscious of that noise. And suddenly he was standing there, and I was like, "What? You know, what are you doing here? You're dead." Because I'm a really black and white person. I'm not very woo-woo, even though this is a very woo-woo story. I didn't know what to do with it. And he said, "Well, sometimes when you die, and you have something important to take care of, God will let you come back. And I didn't get to tell you that I loved you." Mm-hmm. Because my child was kidnapped at the time because I married a Jewish man, and my mother wasn't happy about that, and she did it. So I was raised as a Southern Baptist, but then exposed to Judaism later in my life, and all I can say about that is that I had prayer, and now I'm nothing but spiritual. I had prayers answered no matter what I was, as long as I lived a life that treated other people like I wanted to be treated, which might say something when things happen to me sometimes because I was such a narcissist when I was young. But anyway, when I woke up the next morning, when it happened, it took me to the other side, and I saw things and I knew things or understood things that I had never heard of before, like consciousness. And the first thing that I saw, I was in a room, and it was just white on one side and dark on the other side, black, not just dark, but it was black. And my father was standing there, and he had an organizational chart in front of him, and he said, "See, it's not like what I told you. I didn't raise you right. And I said, what do you mean you didn't raise me right? And he said, well, there's no burning hell unless you think there's a burning hell. It, you know, you create reality with thought. And so he said, you kind of start, it kind of works like this because I knew nothing. And he said, you start out at the bottom, like on a ladder, like a corporate ladder. You start out in the mailroom. And every time you learn a life lesson, you bump up a notch. It's like going through, you know, a hierarchy of a corporate organization. And then eventually, obviously, when you get high enough, the goal would be to reunite with the singular experience. But you got to be ready to do that. And when they say when it's ready, imagine a fire that it takes to melt a steel rod. And a fire that it takes to burn a piece of wood is two substantially different fires. One of them has to be significantly hotter than the other. So if you attempt to reunite, my understanding is, from what I saw, is if you attempt to reunite before you're ready, then you got to start all over because you didn't learn what you need to do that. You didn't learn to recognize that it wasn't your time. You hadn't completely learned the lessons that you need to learn. And so I understood that, and then suddenly I looked behind me and I saw this invisible barrier, and I used to describe it as a piece of plexiglass, but now that I understand what it really was, it was two energy fields butting up against one another, kind of like with magnets, and it was duality, kind of. One side was just white, and there was my father and I in this infinite white room standing there, and then on the other side, there was this one soul pressed up against that barrier. And I don't know the significance of that one soul or if it was just the only one that happened to be there, but I suspect that it was just something to give me a significance of the duality. And that soul was pressed up against this barrier, and I could feel it. And if you've ever known anybody who's really hit rock bottom, it was like that. Multiplied a million times. It was so miserable because it was in this blast, vast black coldness with the light of love right to it, and it couldn't get there. So it was pressed up, but it couldn't get there, and it wasn't even an inch away. And all it had to do to get there was simply say, I am there, and it would have been there, but it couldn't get that. It was caught up in I guess, physical reality. Never thought about that till this moment, but I suppose that's probably what it was. And then the next instant, we were in this other room, and there were two chairs and a table, and everything was white. It was like two white kind of comfy chairs and this white table, and then there was rows and rows and rows and rows of what looked like a library. It had rows and rows of with these things on them that look like books, but when you pull them out, it looks more like a laptop with the screen on top. And then you would put your hand on top of that screen and glean information. And I understood that there was one of those things for every soul. And there was one sitting on the table by us, and I went to pick it up, and my father said, don't touch that, that's for us. So I didn't get to do that, but I said to him, well, have you seen this person that died or that person that died? And he would tell me the story about if he'd seen them before while they were there or if he hadn't seen them. And so then I asked him, what's going to happen to my mother? Because my mother had not been a very nice person in her life. And he said, your mother's going to die in the next 5 years, and what happens to her will be determined by what she does. And she did die in 5 years, and it was not a very pleasant death for her. And so then I asked him if I was doing the things that I was supposed to do, and he said yes. And he kind of did this little laugh, and I said, well, am I doing everything is there something that I'm not doing that I need to be doing? And he went up, yes. And I said, well, what is it? And he said, well, I can't tell you that. That's what you have to learn. But I will tell you this. But whatever it was that he told me, that's the only thing about the whole dream or experience or whatever it was that I don't remember. And then he said, okay, I gotta go, and I won't be back. And he was gone, and I woke up the next morning, and I thought that it had been 3 days, but it was only overnight. And I was profoundly psychic, and especially about health things or emotion, anything to do with emotion. I could feel other people's emotions. And I knew that I had always had that, but I'd never it had never been this loud. I don't know what other word to use, loud. And I knew what it was auditory, and I would hear sentences about what was wrong with people. Like that, I would hear, this person has something. Well, actually, what I would hear was, this person has the big CA, Eva, in their right breast. And you'll know that's what it is because, and they would give me some ridiculous calibration, like, because you had oranges this morning, and or because that person had oranges this morning, and I would ask that person, I'd call them, did you have oranges today? And they would say yes. And how would you know that that person had oranges if you didn't know this other thing too? So I learned how to calibrate this ability that I was hearing, because it's hard to tell sometimes, is it you, the running that's going on in the head, is it you, or is it indeed something that's dropping in as a thought form from consciousness? So I had to figure out how to keep those two separate so that I could have some degree of accuracy. And then I also woke up and I knew people that I hadn't known before I went to sleep, specifically Norm Shealy, Kellen Mays, Daniel Brinkley, and Raymond Moody. Today, Norm is one of my mentors. Daniel is my youngest kid's guardian, and Raymond lives on the same road as my grandmother in Alabama, and I just never knew it. You know, what's the likelihood of all that happening? And the way that I met Norm was I met him at this Council Grove conference out in Kansas. And the same person introduced me to Norm that introduced Caroline to Norm. So there was a synchronicity there. And then Vanyan, I walked into a hotel in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'd been driving all day, and it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was tired. And I went up to the counter, and I was signing in, and somebody walked up behind me and touched me on the shoulder and said, we've known each other for millennia. And I thought, oh, God, some nut has followed me in from the highway. And I turned around, and it was Daniel. I'm like, oh, my God. And we sat down and talked about what we both saw on the other side and compared notes, and it was really all the same. So I believe it, because I had great difficulty understanding that this would happen to me, because I wasn't a seeker of this kind of thing. I didn't even know it existed. But to be able to have these synchronicities all fall at the same time and have something to hold on to that I wasn't making it up in my head was a big deal to me. Is that enough talking for right now?
Yes. And Kim, there was something you wanted to ask about or state about the dark night of the soul that you had found so interesting.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Tiller kind of points to what your experiences led to, which is something very, very worthwhile. He has said, you're fortunate when the universe recognizes you're ready for a transformation and you have a dark night of the soul experience. It takes you beyond where you were searching to understand that old rhythm of your life stance doesn't seem to work. And you have this whole new way of being in the world and all kinds of new ways of understanding the world and people and giving your gift.
And it's so important for all of us to know that when we do go down into that kind of dark night of the soul, of a place of real suffering, that we probably are in a state of transformation, that something radical is happening to us, or at least can happen to us. And you know, Eva, I kept thinking how wonderful it is that we are born in this particular time when there is a science to validate the experiences that we have. And your book, Consciousness, Bridging the Gap Between Conventional Science and the New Science of Quantum Mechanics, is an explanation of that science which supports your experiences. And I want to read to our audience something that one of the endorsers of your book wrote. I just thought it was perfect for your book. He says, in her book, Consciousness, Eva Herr pats the chair, pours some tea, and invites us to listen in on conversations with some of the leading thinkers and scientists of our day. But this is no ordinary tea. Before you know it, the grandfather clock stops in mid-chime. The room distorts, and the oriental rug turns into a magic carpet. Suddenly, you are soaring through wild sectors of imagination and time, at the very fringes of awareness. This is the new science, the wonderland that lies between research and mystery. And it is certainly a science of the miraculous, as it's been called, and you experienced that, and then you interviewed 10 of the top scientists in the world. And let's just start with death. What does the new science have to say about death?
Well, just so you know, there was I probably interviewed about 100 or 150 people to get those 10 people. I tried to get the most respected, credentialed, reproducible science that I could find. And so that's who it ended up with. But what it means to me is it really proves that thought is everything, that physical reality doesn't even exist, that nothing's here that we don't create. So when you're in the middle of that dark night of the soul at the very bottom, it really is about perspective. And the science proves that. I mean, I don't really know where you want me to go, so I'll start with, you know, the random event generator at Princeton. Does that work with you?
Could we just start with death? Because our audience is an audience that has gone through death, and they are working with how to deal with death and what does science think about death. So that would be we could start there. We certainly want you to talk about Princeton.
That works for me. I just don't know where you want to go. I could talk about too many things, so I don't know where to go. Ask me the question that you want me to start with about death. I don't know where to start.
Yeah, well, they talk about consciousness certainly creating matter. It's a completely different worldview than the one that we've been brought up with. I think that the worldview that most of us were born, well, that all of us have been born into, was that there's nothing but matter, that we are a fluke of nature, and there is no meaning or purpose to life, and when we're dead, we're dead. Now, these scientists you interviewed and the new science has so much to say. They completely changed that worldview and support it with their scientific research. So what have they said about death? What is death?
Well,
what happens when we die?
I believe, and with my experience that I had, if you were to drop dead right now while you're on the phone with me, you wouldn't even know that you were dead. The only way we would know that you were dead is that you wouldn't respond to me. And Kim, I would probably hear Kim start freaking out on the other end of the phone. And you would probably be looking, going, what's the matter? Because the body is to the soul what a glove is to the hand. The only reason you have that body is, let's say, for example, if you want to really experience physical reality and you want to touch a rose. So you don't have a body, and you reach down to touch that rose, and there's nothing to touch. So having a body when you reach out and touch that soul without the glove, that's as much as you can feel without a glove on. But you put that glove on, and you can't feel anything. You can't tell that it's a rose. It's like dead to it. So you have that body with neurotransmitters to make that body feel. And if it just drops away, then you're just back to where you're just the watching. If you close your eyes and look through your closed eyes, you still see what's out there, right? I'm looking out my window at the birds I've been posting on my Facebook today. When I close my eyes, those birds, I can still see them there in my mind. I don't feel anything. If my body drops dead, I would still be sitting there looking at those birds. It's just I would suddenly not have the pain. Any pain's not the right word. Any of the sensations from the body, because it would have dropped away, and I would just feel completely good. You know, no headache, no backache, whatever it is. You know, everything would just be watching.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does.
You're just
and
the one.
Actually, what you're saying is that there is no death in the sense that we have been conditioned to think. Yes, is
correct.
That if consciousness creates matter, as the new science tells us, then consciousness continues.
That's correct.
What you're saying, right?
That's correct, and that's certainly what I found. I mean, I didn't even know who Danyon Brinkley was when I had this experience happen. So for us to see the same kinds of things makes me think that there really has to be something else other than this that exists somewhere, because we both saw the same thing and we weren't conditioned the same way.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, the scientists you interviewed discuss the ability of consciousness to communicate with those who have died or other dimensions of reality? What do they say about that?
Well, that question said, do they have the ability to communicate with consciousness? And I don't. This might be a linguistics thing here, so I'm real black and white, so just let me know if it is, okay?
Okay.
They are consciousness at the irreducible. Your soul is consciousness at the irreducible unit, so there's no thing that has to communicate with them because they are that thing. In other words, they are God with the knowing taken away. And consciousness is experienced in gradients. So that has to do with frequencies. I believe, you know, I mean, who knows? But this is what I believe. I've thought about it, and I've talked to hundreds of people about this, and I'm convinced consciousness exists in gradients, meaning that have you ever tried to talk to somebody? Well, this Trump and this past election, how everybody couldn't talk to each other and they fought and argued, because that's two different gradients of consciousness, two different belief systems. Religions that proselytize and try to get you to be something other than what you are, and you're like, well, but I believe in God this way. Those are gradients in consciousness, and those gradients continue to exist even beyond the physical body. You just can't see them. So when you exist in the lower frequencies, then, how do you say this? There's, you know, matter starts forming. But when you exist in the higher frequencies, it's etheric, so there's not the matter attached to the physical form. But you're still there because you're everything. You're the irreducible. I tell people, if you want to understand how it really is exists for a soul, we know that the smallest particle is a molecule of hydrogen, one proton, one neutron, and one electron. We also know that electrons are responsible for the formation of mass, so matter. So let's just pluck out that electron if we happen to have a microscope that is so powerful that it can see down onto the smallest particle of that electron, hydrogen electron. What do we see? Do we see one particle of electron like a BB? No, we don't. We see lots of little particles stuck together with a sticky substance, mostly hydrogen, the most powerful and abundant matter in the entire universe, you know, hydrogen. So you see quarks and gluons next. And so then after you go past quarks and gluons, you finally get down to where there's nothing left but energy. And mm-hmm. that's everything. So you're no different. You're just a little blob of that energy that's been contained within an electromagnetic field vibrating at a different rate. And when I say different rates, and this is just an analogy here because I have no idea. I'm not a scientist. I'm just a woman. Let's just say that this physical body that I'm in right here vibrates at 150,279.68 hertz. Well, your body might vibrate at 1,279.69 hertz. So we're still here, but we vibrate at just a little bit different frequency. So the information that's available to me may not be available to you, and the information that's available to you may not be available to me. So that's why we are who we are. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. And certainly you were able to communicate with your father. And
yes, I was. And
of course, our listeners know many of them have had profound experiences of communicating with those they love who have died, who have stepped into another dimension of reality. Now, you wanted to talk about the Princeton studies, and I think that that's a very good place to go now, the implications of those studies, what they were, what they say about the mind.
Well, they have a binary system there that prints out, a computer system that prints out ones and zeros. It started with peg balls before they had these computers like they do today. They made a pegboard on the wall, much like the kind that they dropped the balls in for the lottery. And the pegs on the board were in the shape of a bell-shaped curve. In other words, like a mountain, you know, it slanted upward and then went all the way up and then slanted downward. And when you drop the balls down into, and they put a piece of plexiglass on the front of it, when they do that, they would drop 10,000 ping-pong balls, and you would expect that all the balls, half would go on one side and half would go on the other side. So then they got some people to meditate, students there and people that worked there, and they would meditate that they wanted all these balls to fall to the left. So that's exactly what happened. When they would drop the balls in, it did it over time, slowly. It might just be 10 balls more than then 10 more balls, but over time, all the balls shifted to the left. And that's exactly what happens. Thought creates subtly like that. And everything is, you're the dead, the people that pass over, they're there. The dead exist. They're right there. And it's that subtlety that they are.
Yes. Well, so the implications of consciousness, you say in your book, is that it's non-local. It's not dependent on space or time. And it's actually not dependent on the brain. That is what they concluded from those studies, right? Maybe you could tell us what non-local really means.
Well, it's everywhere at one time. It's the irreducible unit of an atom. That's the best way that I can say it, is the irreducible unit of an atom. If you get down to the very bottom, it's like sea, the ocean, with all the fish in it. So the ocean, the fish are the ocean. You know, it permeates them so that they are that thing. And that's the way we are.
Well, the mind is everywhere.
Well, I think there's big mind and that there's little mind.
Explain that. That's a good way to look at it.
That was one of the questions. In fact, Christian DeQuincy wrote an article about that. If you go there, he was one of the people I interviewed, but on his webpage, I can't remember the name, Noetic something, but it's Christian DeQuincy, and he writes about that. How big mind is, when Rupert Sheldrake used to say that when the pigeons learn to peck the tops out of the milk jug, suddenly pigeons all over the world knew how to peck milk tops out of the milk jug.
That's so interesting. I've always loved that example.
Yeah, it's a good one, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a field and a wave. That's the best way I could talk about it. You know, it's everything that's out there that you look at. And really, it's all one thing. Instead of being a lot of little things, it's all one thing. And you are that one thing, too, which means that you are all-powerful and exist forever.
So you're really saying that all of life, every one of us, lives in the field of big mind, universal mind. It's simply
yes.
present.
Mm-hmm. And I think that little mind is it's certainly not the brain. We know that the brain is a processor,
mm-hmm.
and it processes a program, which my analogy is that's the God field. I say, may the force be with you, because I think it's all a force of some type,
yes.
you know. So that I think that mind, I think that brain interprets mind through signaling. That's what I think. I think that does it through signaling. And the reason that do you want to know why I think this, or do you want to know more about where do you want to go here?
Go ahead.
Okay. The thing that separates us and makes us different from just the etheric is the fact that we have emotion. That's how God experiences physical reality, because if God didn't have a something to incarnate into with feelings, a dog or a human, whatever it is, then God would just simply be the observer, you know? So he comes into, or she, whoever it is, comes into a physical body, and the way that you is experienced is in gut. Have you ever been stopped by a policeman?
Of course.
What? Have
of
you ever
course.
Looked in your rearview lights and saw that blue light turn on, you get this sick feeling in your gut? Well, that's where I think the feeling starts, is right there, is heart and gut. And when you get a feeling in gut like that, it sends an impulse through your autonomic nervous system, and it gets to the brain in about 8 milliseconds, and it'll go like Morse code, rat-a-tat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat. And then if it's a bad one, it may go rat-a-tat-tat-tat and have an extra tat on the end, which brings illness of some sort into you. But I think that that's how brain interprets, or little mind, yeah, how big mind gets information to little mind. I believe that there's some kind of signaling.
Well, I think I would agree with that too. And certainly, you think of so many of the studies that have been done on the mind, the brain as well, and that it becomes very clear that when we know something is really true, it's through feeling.
Yeah.
And I think that it's too bad that our culture has so, for so many centuries, really denigrated feeling and the heart, and we'll get to that later. But, yes, I just think that we really know something is real. It feels realer than real, as is often said, because
yeah.
we're seeing it.
I said that to a teenager that was at my house the other day. We were talking about what's going on in the world, and I said, I don't remember how he said this, but something about how the teenagers weren't happy. And I said, well, you know, the problem is we have electronics, and parents don't hug their children anymore. They text them and say, I love you, you know, or send them a text that says hug. So the child, the soul, doesn't get the benefit of that nurturing, because when you touch somebody, you know, it changes your skin temperature. It dilates your eyes, your pupils. You know, it sends, it generates heat. Something happens when you love somebody.
And
by not... Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we don't do that anymore, because it can be done without that, you know, actually physically touching, but you got to meditate on it. You got to feel your experience with your child or your loved one, and sending a text with I love you, it's not real. It's simply virtual. You know, our game in physical reality is virtuality with emotion. These cell phones and games people play today, they take out the ability to feel. These kids, you know, shoot and kill people on these games and don't even blink at it. So if you want to love your kids when you're texting that I love you, put some emotion with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll get it.
In communicating with the other side, or with those we love who have stepped into the other side, who have died, is that we know they're present when we feel their presence. We feel that language from the other side, I think.
You may smell something,
mm-hmm.
you may hear something, you may see lights come on or off. They can manipulate things that have electronic things. And you watch for them with your cell phones. I mean, I got off on that because that's an important thing to me, love. But, you know, the cell phone things, they can communicate through these advanced cell phones. I used to know this man... of this man, what was his name? Peter. Oh heck, I can't remember. But anyway, his partner was the nephew of the person who developed the television. And he had developed this machine where he would, this technology where he would wrap copper around certain areas of the property or the house or a person. And he had it hooked up to this television type monitor type screen, and turned this technology on, and he could see things in that television. It was in like this black fuzzy stuff, and pictures would form on it, but he could see people, and he could see structures in where he put this wire around, even though there were no structures visible to the eye. I wish I could think of his name. It's been so long since I've talked about this, because I'm on, you know, doing other things now. But Peter Moscow is the guy, I believe, that introduced me to him. But you could research that and find out who it was that was doing that. Mm-hmm. But it was very interesting. You could see them. And then Stanislav Ojak, he was a friend of Bill Tiller's, and every time he takes a photograph with the camera, it's something about his energy. No matter what camera it is, you can see other things in his photograph. His name is Stanislav Ojak. So if you Google that, you can look him up and see some of his photographs. Yes, okay. Kim?
That's good. No, I mean, a lot of what you're talking about, too, is the feeling and the love. And, you know, that kind of is really tied into the heart mass, role of the heart and coherence. And the feeling component kind of drives the coherence level in developing consciousness, right?
That's exactly right. Actually, when this first happened to me, I contacted Roland and I flew out there and we played with it. The ability, my ability that I have to hear what's on the other side. In fact, that might be something that you want me to talk about, tell other people how to maybe hear their loved ones.
Sure, that's
I don't
key.
Know.
That's right
okay.
on.
That's
angles
and stuff.
Yeah, right.
There's just so many ways to go, you know. Well, the way I do it is, well, the way it happens for me is, you know how you get an idea and you hear that idea? Like, let's call Eva Herr and see if she can be on her show. How did you get that? You heard it, right? You heard it in your head in a silent voice. So you said, okay, I'm going to call Eva Herr. So you did. Well, that's the way everything is. And it's learning to discern whether it's you making up something or if it's somebody coming in from the field. The way it comes in from the field is it just drops in like one idea, like a cartoon picture. And it comes, and it also, you'll find that it comes in from the top of your head. It comes in and drops in right on the top of your head. Your things, your daily life and the ego mind, the little mind, runs horizontally across your forehead. If you think a thought right now, look at your mind. Where is it? It's across your forehead, like a ticker tape running in the stock market office, just like that. But when it's something from consciousness, it'll just drop down in the middle of your head. So if that happens, you can probably feel pretty safe that you're communicating with something out there, or something other than your mind.
And it would also be the feeling, don't you think, Eva, that there was my experience with that is that I just know from my feeling that I feel that it is from.
Yeah. It's certainly that way. You know, for me, it started overnight like that. It inundated me. And so over time, I have, and obviously, if you're having feeling with a lot of stuff, it's getting get too much. So over time, I had to teach myself to not feel and just read it, just observe it.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you open the door, you know, it can start coming. And also, I'm really serious about this. I never believed it this much until I did a reading for somebody one time, and I said, do you have a cold sore coming? I mean, a style in your eye? And she said, yes. And the next day, I got a style that was so bad I had to get IV antibiotics. You got to protect yourself.
Yes, yes. That's
you know, you got to, you know, it really does work. And when people use that protection and they call me, say, wanting a medical intuitive reading, if they protect themselves, I can't do the reading. It's just mm-hmm. like dead. There's nothing there to hear. So protect yourself and make yourself open to it and practice. I used to pendulum, sorry.
Yes, go ahead.
I used to pendulum, and I made this little chart with ABCs in a circle, and I'd hold that pendulum over it, and I'd prop my arm on the side and flip my wrist over backwards and kind of let it hold that way because it was more stable that way than if you hold your wrist up. And it started spelling out stuff, and the more that I did it, the more that it intense it became, and it got to the point where I don't even need that pendulum anymore if I don't want to use it, but I like it because it's a calibration tool for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we're running out of time, and we want you to talk about what you're working on now, but for our listeners, they could go to Heart Math and also learn methods of gaining mental coherence, which would also help in the communication. But, Kim?
We want to know what you're up to these days. We know you were working on another book, and we want you to share about that. And also, please provide your website for our listeners to follow up with you after the show.
My website is evaherr.com. That's evaherr.com. I'm working on a new book right now on early detection and prevention of disease using nutrition and genetics. I don't know what the title is yet, but I'm partnering with the great Stephen Sinatra, Mark Houston, Amy Yasko, Hyla Kass, Roland McCrady. They're all going to be in this book. This book, if you pick this book up and you read this book will tell you everything you need to know to take charge of your health, including how to early detect symptoms before it gets bad, how you know. It'll talk about methylation and genetics and nutrition. And that's what I'm doing.
Say more about methylation.
Methylation. The thing that I'm going to be focusing on is particularly a couple of genes called MTHFR and C677 and COMT. The genes that involve mood disorders and heart attacks and autoimmune stuff. So,
I missed a word. What was the first word? What kind of disorders before immune disorders?
Cardiovascular, immune, clotting things, addiction. I'm going to be focusing. And really how to keep hold of your quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
I had a massive heart attack a few years ago, and I'm going to tell you every single thing that I have learned over 15 years of interviewing the leading minds in holistic health care and everything that I know as an intuitive, and I promise you, there is nothing else out there like what I'm going to give these people in this book.
Oh, I love it. That's great. I like that kind of confidence and knowledge. I want to just say one thing that Amit Goswami said, that you quote him in your book. When he talks about consciousness as being primary, that it creates the material world, that it is the ground of being, and De Quincey would add consciousness and energy, but I thought it was extremely interesting and well said when he said that since this is true, since consciousness creates matter, then that means that it's the work of science to deal with consciousness and with everything that is a part of consciousness, which is love, feeling, our spirituality. And then he says the universe has a purpose, and so do we, and so does science, that science has the purpose to help the human being to pursue soul.
And this would be a way of helping us to overcome our present materialism, which he says is like a disease in our midst that must be healed. And science now becomes, or at least has a very great role in helping us to heal and to, therefore to find the soul. I thought that was extraordinarily beautifully said, that, and it's so different from the way we thought about science in the past, that here the science has the purpose of helping us to pursue soul. That was beautiful, Eva. Very well done.
There's something very important right there with Ahmet. When he read this book, he called me and said, I'll never forget the day. Both he and Bill Tiller called me and said something that really kind of rocked my world. But he said, oh, my God, Eva, now I know why there's no meeting of the minds in science. Because it all has to do with defining that gradient in consciousness. Every time I would ask somebody, what is your definition of consciousness? I would get them, you know, all kind of answers. Well, it's the ground of all being. It's the irreducible unit of an atom. It's the opposite of being in a coma. It's being aware. It's being aware that you're aware. It's being aware that you're aware that you're aware. And so when he realized that if you don't define what it is that you're talking about, and you're talking to somebody else and they have that same word and they define it in a different way, then the two of you can't have a meeting of the minds about what it is that you're talking about. So when you're talking to your listeners about consciousness, or if you're ever talking to your students or your patients or whoever it is, you got to say, well, in this particular instant, consciousness is a noun, or it's a verb, or it's an adjective, because it's different for every sentence that you use it in. And so there, we have a huge misinterpretation going on in science, because here Ahmet goes, imagine all these scientists going to their annual meeting, and they all have their models of physical reality on their papers, you know, in their hands, and they get there, and they start talking about it, and they start getting into fights. And this really happens. Mm-hmm. They start arguing and throwing papers and, you know, slamming chairs. I mean, it gets hot in there because one person's talking about spirit and one person's talking about matter, and they don't know it, or gradients of those things. So they don't even have a meeting of the minds what they're talking about.
Yeah, and so you really do talk about that in the book, that, or at least it's experienced in the book, that how we use words such as frequency, and scientists did not want to use frequency for mind.
Yeah, that's
think
right.
That's only in the physical world. So I think we're right at that place in our learning that we are creating new vocabulary, new language, and we're differentiating and refining it, I think, which is necessary.
And we need to. And until we do, then we need to say, I'm talking about definition A, or I'm talking about definition B. So that you don't fight with people. And that way, there will be, a critical mass that comes with the right belief system.
Well, they say it usually takes 100 years for a culture, in this case, the planetary culture, to become aware of something new. And certainly we have a science that negates the old worldview. And
that's right.
We don't have 100 years, and your book certainly helps to speed up that process.
Well, thank you. I had to do it.
I'm glad you did.
It drives me crazy.
Pretty easy reading. I want our audience to know. It's. Would you say the title of the book again, Eva, as we end, so that...
It's Consciousness, Bridging the Gap Between Conventional Science and the New Science of Quantum Mechanics. And I just have a high school education, so if I can do it and understand this, if you just take your time, there's no math in there. It's all concepts.
Yes,
theory.
If there had been math, I wouldn't say it. I wouldn't be saying it's easy.
Yeah.
Okay,
Eva, we want to thank you so much for being with us today and also for the work that you are doing in the world. Before I sign off, too, I want to say I was really inspired by what was in the book about intention and creativity and how it's all right there, and I think we're going to learn how to see it.
Yes, and that we actually, William Tiller makes it clear, we have the ability to do incredible things. Mm-hmm. We just have to learn how to
do it. Yeah, I'm not special. Anybody can do it.
You are special.
Okay. So hopefully we'll be in touch again.
Have a good one, okay?
You too. And so, listeners, please don't forget to go to evaher.com. And if you'd like to find out about those two Forever Family events that are coming up soon, visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Thanks for being with us, and we will see you again soon. Or we will talk with you again soon. Bye-bye.
A culture, in this case, the planetary culture, to become aware of something new. And certainly we have a science that negates the old worldview. And
that's right.
We don't have 100 years, and your book certainly helps to speed up that process.
Thank you. I had to do it.
I'm glad you did.
It drives me crazy.
Pretty easy reading. I want our audience to know. Would you say the title of the book again, Eva, as we end, so that
it's Consciousness: Bridging the Gap Between Conventional Science and the New Science of Quantum Mechanics. And I just have a high school education, so if I can do it and understand this, if you just take your time, there's no math in there. It's all concepts. And
yes,
theory.
If there had been math, I wouldn't say it. I wouldn't be saying it's easy.
Yeah.
Okay, Kim.
Eva, we want to thank you so much for being with us today and also for the work that you are doing in the world. Before I sign off, too, I want to say I was really inspired by what was in the book about intention and creativity and how it's all right there, and I think we're going to learn how to see it.
Yes, and that we actually, William Tiller makes it clear, we have mm-hmm. the ability mm-hmm. to do incredible things. Mm-hmm. We just have to learn how to do
it. Yeah, I'm not special. Anybody can do it.
You are special.
Okay. So hopefully we'll be in touch again.
Have a good one, okay? Happy
you
New
too.
Year.
And so, listeners, please don't forget to go to evaher.com, and if you'd like to find out about those two Forever Family events that are coming up soon, visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Thanks for being with us, and we will see you again soon, or we will talk with you again soon. Bye-bye. Talk with you again soon. Bye-bye.